The Sunstone Foundation presents The Mormon Message in a French World, a cross-cultural comparison of thematic emphasis in LDS publications. Recorded live at the 1989 Sunstone Symposium, held August 23rd through 26th in Salt Lake City, Utah. We take you now to the University of Utah campus where the program is about to begin.
Let me start out by saying I did serve a mission in France a number of years ago, and in the long run, looking back, France impacted my life as much as certainly more than I impacted France's life. Crossing cultures really made a difference in the long run for me. And maybe it was because I went back for a couple of years after having been a missionary and picked up all the things I missed in that missionary bliss, that you miss some of the detail, the sidelight details of a culture. As for my study that I'm doing here, it is a cultural study. I back it up with a lot of sociological underpinnings that I'm not even going to go into really at all here, but if any of you would like to verify some of the stats or some of the bibliography that I've used on this paper, see me afterwards, but it gets terribly boring, like gagez-moi avec une cuillère kind of stuff when you get heavy duty into the technical aspect. Let me give you an overall framework for what I'm doing here. Basically, I'm trying to explore the larger picture of the process of the rise of a new world religion. And if indeed Mormonism becomes a world religion, then it will be the first one in 1,400 years to do so, and certainly the first opportunity for sociologists of religion as well as cultural historians to look at a religion from its inception, from its beginnings, to where it gets across cultural boundaries and becomes major, global. So that's what I'm looking at. My study focuses upon the LDS movement as a model for the successful transmission of a religion across cultural boundaries in the process of becoming global. I might add, I submitted this paper at the last moment and didn't have time to give it one of those striking titles that I've become accustomed to as I look at everybody else's papers. So, not to be outdone, I came up with my own titles, subtitles that aren't on the program. The official title, let's see, what have I got? The Mormon Message in France, Cross-Cultural Comparison. I might change that to The Mormon Message in France, Coffee, Wine, and Sex, Just Say No. Or something like Le Moulin Rouge Made Lily White. So that would be my subtitle. And maybe we would have drawn even more enthusiastic response. However, pushing on. Somebody must have overheard me. France offers a particularly valuable setting in which to study the growth of Mormonism and the transmission of culture for two reasons. Number one, there exist between American culture and French culture clearly recognizable cultural boundaries that must be overcome for the church to succeed. If I were talking about transferring or transmitting Mormonism into Canada, might not be a lot of room to show for cultural conflicts. Or, second problem that France overcomes is a first world country where critics of Mormonism are less apt to attribute the church's growth to successful cultural and material imperialism. And in third world countries, people can attribute the growth of the church to successful model of collaboration, getting ahead, middle class appeal. But in France, it doesn't work. There's nothing to be gained in France materially from becoming Mormon, nor any status at this point. Maybe later on, Mormons will get a better image in France, but right now, it's mainly the wine problem. Well, in spite of France being very different culturally, a first world nation, highly industrialized, with an ego big enough to float the Titanic back to the surface, Mormonism is succeeding in France, and to give you an idea of its success, church growth statistics worldwide. Worldwide, the church is growing at 6.34%, which is very impressive. And actually, it's not the leading. It's not the fastest growing church in the world. African Christianity is growing faster, as well as Islam. So it's the fastest growing religion on the American continent, North and South America, but not in the world. France has a growth rate of 5.97%. And the U.S., the church rate, Mormon church is growing in the U.S. at 3.22%. That puzzles the heck out of the French people. And I think it's fascinating. The demographic research of Rodney Stark at the University of Washington on Mormonism indicates that Mormonism could easily and very well might attain the full status of a world religion within the next 100 years. Growing at that growth rate, it will definitely number in the hundreds of millions of believers within a century, growing geometrically. This study focuses upon the Mormon Church in France. However, it looks beyond statistics of growth and conversion to begin to analyze the cultural implications of spreading an indigenous religion across national and cultural boundaries. It proposes that the LDS approach to assimilating a French membership offers a viable model for understanding directions the church is taking to adapt its message and its image in other foreign settings around the globe. Through content analysis of one full year, the year 1988, of the church's official magazine in the U.S., of course, the Ensign, with its counterpart in France, L'Étoile, thematic comparisons permitted me an analysis of message differences for the two countries. The study hypothesized that the church leadership headquartered in Salt Lake City would be sensitive to those French cultural practices especially susceptible to conflict with Mormon religious values. It was further hypothesized that church leaders would use the institution's French magazine to emphasize obedience to church values over continuance of native cultural habits. Thus, it was expected that content analysis of the French magazine would reveal thematic emphases that could be interpreted as awareness and adjustment by American Mormon leaders to a foreign audience. This was not the case. Elements of French culture conflicting with LDS principles were not given increased treatment in the literature surveyed. However, the Mormon message in the two cultures was found to be significantly different in other ways. Let me talk quickly, to let you know what I did to come up with these pretty straightforward conclusions. My content analysis procedures. I based my approach to content analysis upon the work of Klaus Krippendorf, 1980, and Gordon and Gary Shepherd, 1984. Let me just sum up in my own words what I did. I took those two magazines. One has 80 pages, one has 48 pages. That automatically means there's going to be a selection process by which the message in the French magazine has got to be different than the message in the American magazine, just by editing it down. So, I went through, I relied upon merely the listing given each article in the subject index at the end of each year, the last magazine in the year, the December issues. That gave me an idea of the kind of subject headings that the church was using, and I felt the best way to go was to use their headings so I didn't start confusing language. I just used the subject headings that the church itself uses to do an index. I looked at keywords in the title to get an idea of what theme is in this article. Then I went through content analysis, paragraph by paragraph, and if a topic such as Book of Mormon appeared in that paragraph, then I counted all the paragraphs in an article. This was not exciting work, but it was kind of exciting. Each time the Book of Mormon showed up, just written those three words in a paragraph, I counted it. At the end, I counted how many paragraphs had the Book of Mormon, how many paragraphs talked about conversion, how many talked about Word of Wisdom. Then, if an article contained 20 total paragraphs and 10 of them mentioned Book of Mormon, then 10 out of 20, 50% of the text was scored as treating this theme. If, and this happened a lot, each article could have contained Book of Mormon, conversion, using the Holy Ghost. There were many possible themes within a paragraph and within an article, and often there were as many as, I think the most I got were six. Six themes within an article. And the way I boiled it down was somewhat arbitrary, but at least 25% of the paragraphs in an article needed to have Book of Mormon in it before I felt that was a major theme. If less than one-fourth of the article mentioned Book of Mormon, then it wasn't a major theme, and I took the other major themes. So that's how I worked this up. Voila, all I'll need to say, I hope, at this point, anyway, on the content analysis procedures underlying it. Now let's get to the juicy part. Potential sources of conflict. French culture, Mormon teachings, the word of wisdom, the word of wisdom. In modern times, the word of wisdom has become a most obvious outward feature of Orthodox LDS identity. It is also one feature of American Mormonism most likely to conflict with French culture. Just table one. Table 1 indicates the differing emphases that French American and American Mormon cultures have given to alcohol consumption in recent history. Wine consumption for people, everybody in the society over age 18, so that's per capita, 18 or older. 1950, the average French person consumed 200 bottles or liters of wine per year, the average 18-year-old or over. That's diminished by 1970, but you can immediately see a great, vast, an ocean, we might say, of contrast between Utah in particular and French consumption of alcoholic beverages, wine in particular. Historically, alcohol use studies have consistently placed France as the top consumer of alcoholic beverages in the Western world. I don't have the stats for China, sake, Japan, I don't know. But a classic study from 1950 to 54 found the 200 liters figure. So by 1970, the total absolute alcohol intake, age 15 and over, in France had fallen to 22.13 liters, down to 140.45 bottles of wine per year. Liter bottles. Summary, based upon these statistics, for a good part of recent history, the average French adult has been consistently consuming from 2.2 to 3.5 times more pure alcohol per year than an American counterpart. And then, in terms of wine, the French have been consuming from 20 to 40 times more wine per year. I also bring in coffee, Frencher. Notorious for their coffee, and it's not like American coffee. If you've been there, it's like cappuccino, Italian coffee. I've drunk the stuff and lived to tell, but especially with my Mormon background, it didn't prepare me for drinking French coffee, and so I typically do not drink French coffee. And they just started to get decaffeinated in the last, say, 5 years. A clear view of this value tension over both alcohol and coffee emerges in a recent study. Let me emphasize here. I want to now dig below the stats. What does it mean in France to drink wine? And to Puritan, Victorian, Mormon America, which is a long mouthful of repressive tendencies in terms of wine, it's hard to imagine really why they do that, why they drink that much wine. Well, C. Brooklyn Durr, in a recent study of Mormon business leaders, found that the refusal to drink wine or coffee by French Mormon executives created a serious obstacle to successful business dealings that often come in the aftermath of the traditional French business lunch. Usually a 3-hour-long exchange over fine food, expensive wines, followed by coffee, liquor, and conversation. The process of eating together is accompanied by a deepening of the relationship between participants and an increase of trust emanating from a deep cultural value that breaking bread together and establishing collaboration is the best foundation. Each Mormon routine by refusing wine or coffee, quote, he disrupts the ritual, emphasizes differences rather than similarities, and creates uneasiness by not being on the same wavelength. I base a lot of my work upon a French definition of culture. And there are American definitions of culture and French definitions of culture, and as in many other cultural practices, they tend to go just opposite. The American definition of culture that I get from Clyde Cluckholm out of Harvard basically says a culture is defined by the unique things it does. The French, Levi Strauss, his definition of culture is differences that group, differences between groups. In other words, he doesn't look at a group and say, this is their culture. He says, what do they do that's different from them? And so it's always in relationship with the other that the French, through the school of Levi Strauss, they emphasize culture by what is different by the surrounding culture. So Levi Strauss's definition of culture is differences between groups is particularly relevant to the conflicting cultural elements that have surfaced here. For the typical French businessman, drinking wine or coffee is not only a part of acceptable routine, but is a very desirable feature that it influences behavior beyond the actual drinking itself. In opposite fashion, Mormon culture attaches value to not drinking wine or coffee, which establishes a firm cultural boundary of difference with the French, to the point of being an obstacle to successful interaction in certain situations. Even as Mormon prescription of alcohol and coffee can create tension with non-Mormon culture groups, so is the reverse true. Consuming alcohol and coffee is a violation of Mormon religious doctrine. To encourage compliance, church authorities withhold leadership roles and privileges of full participation in certain church rituals. The assumption follows that LDS leaders will also encourage compliance through official teachings as reflected in church magazines. Finally comes the hypothesis put forth in this study that the church leadership will make a measurably greater effort to communicate this value to a French Mormon audience in the church magazines in order to overcome the influence of French culture. So, there's the first leg of my study, focusing on word of wisdom through wine consumption. Sexual mores. A second area likely to produce conflict between Mormon and French cultures lies in the approach of each to sexual attitudes and practices. To make the topic manageable, this study will focus upon premarital sex and the related practice of premarital cohabitation. The lecherous and sexually depraved images attached to Mormonism during the 19th century due to its early practice of polygamy have had very little grounds. It's almost French in approach there for the first 50 years. However, they have had very little grounds for continuance in the last 100 years. The church takes an unequivocal stand on sex outside of marriage and did so even during the era of polygamy, 1840 to 1890. Mormon scripture from the beginning built upon Christianity's seventh commandment, thou shalt not commit adultery, to encourage a rigid sexual code. The Book of Mormon labels sexual transgression, quote, an abomination in the eyes of the Lord, yes, the most abominable of sins, after that of spilling innocent blood or of denying the Holy Ghost, Alma 39:5. The Doctrine and Covenants of the Church reiterates the seventh commandment with a modern addition, thou shalt not commit adultery, nor do anything like unto it. The position of the Church on what it labels moral purity urges abstinence in a parallel manner to the stand taken towards substance abuse or substance use in the Word of Wisdom. Compliance with guidelines of moral purity is encouraged by strong measures. As Christensen, in 1982, sums up, quote, breaking the law of chastity carries with it rather severe negative sanctions, ranging all the way from sensing disapproval to being denied a recommend for entrance into one of the sacred temples, which, among other things, would preclude achieving the highly valued goal of eternal marriage, to either being disfellowshipped or excommunicated from the church. The following table indicates the impact of Mormon teachings and moral pressures upon attitudes among LDS youth towards premarital sex. A comparison to French attitudes on the same topic reveals significant cultural differences. I did have a felt pen up here. Does anyone have a black, pick up a black felt pen?
Well, I guess I can do without it.
Franks, 1969 statistics on French attitudes towards premarital sex comes from a 1966 poll of 10,000 young people ages 15 to 19. Christensen's study was done among LDS college students in the Intermountain region of the U.S. The reason I wanted my felt pen, does anybody have a felt pen? It's very striking if I can write down. Too big. Well, further research by Christensen in 1978, so 10 years after the last study, revealed something very fascinating, that attitudes against premarital sex among LDS youth were resisting increasing trends towards a more general permissiveness in the rest of the U.S. That study showed that only 11.9 instead of 22.4, so 10 years later, that number had reduced by half of LDS males approved of premarital sex, and only 7.8, or less than half, of LDS females approved of premarital sex. In the same study, he found that 79.4 of non-Mormon American males and 75% of non-Mormon American females in the same geographical Western States area did approve of premarital sex. So the church teachings have either had a great impact, something, and it surely is open to a lot of speculation, that while the rest of the nation is going one way, Mormon response among the Mormon youth, all those firesides are certainly making an impact, reducing people's willingness to engage in premarital sexual activity. Now for a little word for the French. More recent studies in France indicate trends of sexual permissiveness parallel to non-Mormon America. Zeldin, 1982, shows that 40% of French couples in 1978 cohabitated during an average of 18 to 24 months prior to marriage, which is up doubled since 1968. In 1970, the French Court of Cassation, or the French Supreme Court, ruled that couples living together unmarried were no longer, quote, contrary to today's moral standards, or today's morals, period. In 1972, illegitimate children had the same rights as legitimate ones before the law in France. And then in 1978, unmarried couples received the same status as if married once they signed a declaration of living together. Based upon the 1978 ruling, a concubine now has the same status as a wife for Social Security purposes. Her significant other dies, she gets his Social Security benefits until she, for the rest of her life. And also French Social Security, great stuff. they do things like pay your rent if you have two children under five in the household. Socialism, though it's being mellowed out, I suppose it's not rabid socialism, but Social Security in France hits basically everybody but the rich. Then it really hits them hard because they pay for it, so. It would be an error to assume that increased cohabitation is a sign of increased promiscuity in France, however. I was, you know, the first time I went to a topless beach, I had the same problem. You know, you take your American approach to things and you think, boy, there must be a lot of stuff going on in the bushes up there because these people are down here, the women are topless. And not so. Just because they have a shocking, different moral standard doesn't mean they don't have a moral standard. Nobody was up in the bushes. And the fact is, even the grandmothers go topless on the beaches in France, which is really shocking. Rather, Zeldin suggests that promiscuity has decreased in the last 20 years. In the end, over 70 to 80% of young couples still get married after a trial period of living together, and 70% of females cohabit with only one partner before marriage. Based upon evidence of the liberalness of the French government towards premarital cohabitation and the increasing tendency in French culture for young couples to begin intimate relations before marriage, this study hypothesizes that the LDS Church will give added emphasis to messages encouraging moral purity to its French Mormon audience. So to sum up, two areas of potential conflict between Mormon and French cultural values have been identified, the word of wisdom and sexual mores. as expressed through attitudes towards and the practice of premarital sexual relations. The raw statistics that suggest fundamental divergences in the habits of each culture in these areas are viable. However, it is important to push beyond the facts to a conception, as clear as possible, of the cultural meaning and significance each group has attached to these habits over time. Wine, coffee, and sex mean very different things in different cultures. This is especially true for an average French citizen and a typical American Mormon, as broad as the range of attitudes may be within each category. Indeed, wine is deeply embedded in day-to-day French culture. The traditional worker sees it as a source of strength and claims to need a minimum ration each day to get his work done or her work done. Parents are known to begin accustoming their children to the taste of wine as early as the age of two. In the Haut-Rhin region, it is tradition for parents to give school children a glass of wine before sending them to school to get them off to a good start. Though young people are considered minors and cannot legally consume alcoholic beverages in public places until age 18, unless accompanied by someone over 18, in actual practice, few restrictions exist. In Auvergne, 15-year-old soccer players drink a full liter of wine apiece before going on the field to compete for their hometowns. That must be hilarious. Nobody gets hurt, or at least nobody feels the pain. With meals, wine is considered not only to enrich culinary enjoyment, but symbolizes, quote, conviviality and participation, bon ami and joie de vivre. And the finer the wine, the higher the sense of festivity. French attitudes towards sex are somewhat more difficult to establish. It's not a leap of the imagination that the absence of either the Puritan or the Victorian eras on their native soil would make for a rather different sexual culture than in the U.S., which has experienced both. However, in outward ways, modern France seems to hold dear at least some of the values that Mormons subscribe to. In Franck's 1966 study of the attitudes of 10,000 young people, he found that faithfulness was the number one quality they hoped for in their ideal partner, ahead of love, beauty, intelligence. Though divorce was rising in 1982, it was still only half that of the United States, 33% divorce rate in France. And yet, behind these outward signs, the French have a somewhat different cultural history in terms of sexuality. Whereas other cultures attempt to suppress or to control sexual expressions, the French tolerate a great variety of overt sexuality in many forms. From houses of prostitution to famous dancing clubs like Les Folies Bergères, to nudity... Archie Bunker gave me that word. To nudity. I was at a teaching moment when I was watching All in the Family one time, and he said nudity. Okay. Nudity in film, on television. I was never so shocked as being a Mormon missionary and the television's on, and there's this passionate love scene during the Joseph Smith story. And I was passionate about the Joseph Smith story, but this was confusing beyond compare. Nudity in film, television, erotic fiction in magazines, sex, shops, premarital sex, adultery. The French simply find sex less shocking and less scandalous than the English or the Americans. As Zeldin sums up in his later work, quote, foreigners are more excited by French naughtiness than are the French themselves. Some French, especially males, are open and experimental in their approach to sexual relations. Many are not. Some women find sexual fulfillment in marriage. Some do not. Many men and women have extramarital affairs, and many more do not. The real difference is that the French make such little fuss about it all. The ones who practice more traditional sexual mores tolerate the ones who do not. There are few moral crusades these days. Perhaps it is a sign of an older society that has had its share of moral crusades, one that has learned the value of tolerance from many false starts, the wars of religion in particular. For Mormons, wine and coffee have important but very different cultural roles from those found in France. Though Americans in general adopted prohibition as a national policy for only slightly more than a decade, Mormons have both generalized it to other beverages and have made it an integral part of their identity for most of this century. Consumption of any form of alcohol, coffee, tea, or the use of tobacco is considered physically and morally damaging. Just as the French have built cultural attitudes and practices around alcohol and coffee consumption, the Mormons have built attitudes and structures around non-consumption. Finally, using Levi Strauss's definition of culture as differences between groups, Mormon culture is readily distinguishable from French culture in the areas outlined above. The statistics alone are revealing, but behind the numbers are two objective realities that this study attempts to begin to explore. The next step in this exploration undertakes an examination of the ways the LDS Church is reaching across such pronounced cultural boundaries to assimilate French members. Analysis of differing thematic emphases are used to define the general framework of the message the Church communicates in France as compared to their message in the United States. Table 3 presents the emphases given themes of potential conflict in the official church publications to each cultural audience for the year 1988. The Word of Wisdom in the Ensign, there were three articles that dealt with that. More than 25% of the article was devoted, so it was a major theme. In the A12, nothing. It was mentioned once. I found the mention of the Word of Wisdom once. And it was about a Portuguese convert who had winemaking in his family and did the ultimate test of his faith by giving it up and becoming a saint. And so it was mentioned in one paragraph of that article. Sexual morality, two articles devoted in the Ensign to sexual morality, and in the Etoile, one. Let me note, it's very significant. I omitted the two monthly issues in both countries containing proceedings of the LDS biannual general conferences. The conference issues are not counted. These issues are identical and thus irrelevant to a study of differences. The French get exactly the same Ensign as the Americans get for the conference issues, so these are irrelevant to what I'm doing. The empirical evidence in Table 3 does not bear out the hypothesis that the American-based Mormon institution attempted to assimilate French members through increased treatment of problematic cultural differences in the year studied. In fact, it suggests rather the opposite. The total sample of Ensign articles was 223 articles. Treatment of the Word of Wisdom as a major theme was 1.3%. Total sample for the Etoile was 118 articles, so that editing down process was there. I might mention that not only is the Etoile edited from the Ensign, but it draws upon BYU addresses, general regional representative addresses. It draws upon many sources that are not in the Ensign. So it is a unique publication in its own right. Clearly, the LDS Church did not use its official French publication in 1988 to directly address potential French cultural conflict. This fact does not invalidate the assumption that an important function of the official literature is to assimilate French believers into the church body. Rather, it establishes that Mormonism is adapting its message in unique ways across cultural boundaries. The contours of this adaptation process is made more clear in Table 4. And here's where I get really to the heart of it. So what is going on in these two cultural sectors? Here are the major themes for the year. Can you see that okay? Certainly not incompatible, but certainly different, and understandably different. The themes outlined here above reflect the broad outlines of two different but not incompatible church profiles, cultural profiles. In America, family-centered messages dominate the official literature of the church. Family, parenthood, family history, and marriage appear as constant topics among the five most common themes. Family ranks third in importance in the French publication, well behind the faith-promoting themes of the Book of Mormon and conversion, and only slightly ahead of messages on actually doing missionary work and the guiding power of the Holy Ghost, also a key to faith building and conversion. It is important to note that the Book of Mormon was the focus of church-wide scripture study for the year 1988. In France, this is clearly evident by the abundance of supporting articles aimed to enrich Book of Mormon study. In the U.S., despite emphasis given the Book of Mormon as part of the Sunday school program, it still remained secondary to the amount of magazine space given family and parenthood. It is possible that the differing profiles presented by the major themes above are simply an outgrowth of the differing sizes of the two magazines, which I talked about editing down. However, I think I've dealt with that enough, that the two magazines are significantly different sources many times. In the late 1970s, Charles Didier, a native Belgian who has risen to general authority status in the Mormon Church, was asked if there was a marked American influence in the Church's programs in Europe. He replied, "I'll be very frank with you and I will say yes, in a way. However, the Church's programs are adapted more and more, not, I would say, to our culture, but to the one true culture, the culture of Jesus Christ." The findings of this study seem to corroborate DDA's response. There is little evidence of an effort to adapt to France's unique cultural situation. Potential areas of conflict are not given special emphasis. Rather, these areas are de-emphasized as the Church focuses upon an altogether different message composed of the Book of Mormon, conversion, families, missionary work, converting others, and the Holy Ghost, which is the first fruit of conversion. These, in DDA's terminology, would then seem to be among the basic elements of the culture of Jesus Christ, as perceived by the Mormons. Conclusions. Mormon culture in France emphasizes conversion and change. The focus of that change is the convert's own culture. But the new culture offered in its place is surprisingly silent upon some of the more prominent features of American Mormonism. Though the motives for this are beyond the scope of speculation here, one conclusion is within this paper's reach. The LDS faith is adapting its message in a foreign setting, and in doing so, it is creating a very new culture. This socio-religious culture is based upon a sacred book, much in the tradition of Judaism, Christianity, or Islam. And let me emphasize that. The major religions that exist in the Western world today, every one of them began with its own unique sacred book, Old Testament, New Testament, or the Quran. And Mormonism has that incredible feature of it's got its own special sacred book, which bids very well for a future development of another major world religion. As with these religious traditions, Judaism, Christianity, or Islam, particularly in the early stages of their development, Mormonism is putting great emphasis upon conversion. The message it is sending in the literature surveyed is unmistakably Mormon, yet unmistakably different from American Mormonism. And that might just be a level of maturity. You've got a very young Mormon culture in France. If you go back to the 1840s in America, I think there's great similarities with early Mormonism in America. They didn't talk about doing your family genealogy in the 1840s. They do talk about it in France, but I think what we see in France is a young Mormon cultural entity that will most likely develop along similar patterns, perhaps along similar lines as Mormonism has in America. Areas of conflict with French culture are de-emphasized and themes are much more adapted to the assimilation of recent converts. Not only does it offer messages of reassurance upon the life changes that these new recruits have made, but it encourages them to participate in the recruitment of others. The degree to which the French model of cross-cultural assimilation presented in this study is applicable to other nations in which the LDS Church is active remains to be verified, so there's lots to be done. However, the fact that Mormonism has established a foothold of nearly 20,000 members in France and is growing at this rate, almost double the United States, despite the kind of fundamental differences outlined in this study, says much for the future of this increasingly global religion. Indeed, as Dr. Rodney Stark at the University of Washington has said, he may have been entirely correct in announcing the rare event of the birth of a new world faith. If this is even partially so, his suggestion that the miracle of the Mormon success, quote, makes them the single most important case on the agenda of the social scientific study of religion is not as far-fetched as many scholars might at the present time presume, and let this paper add its voice to the call for further research on an international as well as a national level. And let me just add that I teach French African at Washington State University, and so I'm very much in contact with African culture through my work these days for the last 5 years. I think the next step is to, in my own research, when I get my dissertation done, is to look at what's happening when you take Mormonism into Africa, talk about cultural differences, and maybe the most fascinating thing, watch for this in the future, Jarvis signaled it, there are 51 nations in Africa, except for South Africa. I know of none of them that outlaw polygamy. And about 70% of them practice polygamy to a great extent. A number of my colleagues at Washington State University have 4 mothers, 3 mothers. One has 32 children in his family. Whoa. What will the church do in assimilating that culture? You tell them to stop, and they say, why? Because in America, it's against the law. Won't cut it. I wonder what will happen. If the Mormon institution says, go ahead, it's not against the law in your country, Mormons in Zaire, Cameroon, practice polygamy, you're going to see headlines in the New York Times, I'm sure. What will they do? I think the cultural differences, as we get further and further beyond Western world, and especially Western Europe and America, fascinating field. That's it.
Plenty of time. I don't have any sociological background, so I'm very glad that he ignored that part of his paper. I found this paper was interesting because it, with some very limited data, supports conclusions that have been made by other writers from different fields, and that is that the church essentially creates a Mormon culture wherever it goes. I'll talk more about that in a minute. Let me just talk quickly about the paper. I thought that the method used here, the analysis of the articles and so forth, was reasonably good from what I could tell. It was fairly limited, and I think that can be a problem in stretching some conclusions from it, although the conclusions were not far off as far as I could tell. Two assumptions about the church magazine in France, the Étoile, are things I'm still not sure about. One is the assumption that it's edited specifically for the French culture. My understanding, and I wasn't able to verify this with anybody who really knows, is that there's a single international church magazine format, and that in general there are a set number of articles that go out in every language. So I don't know if it's fair to say that the Étoile is edited specifically. Do you know?
I think that's entirely true, which makes
a minor difference. Also, I don't know how fair it is to use the Étoile as a means of evaluating the Mormon message to converts in France, because I think the missionaries themselves have much more influence. And even for new converts, it may be kind of overgeneralizing to say that magazine is typical of the official church message. I really enjoyed the discussion of values in French culture that John had in his paper. One comment I'd add about word of wisdom problems that missionaries and members come up with is that I think, to the church's benefit, it's becoming more and more acceptable in France to be very health conscious. And although it's virtually impossible to get rid of these centuries of culture that revolve around winemaking and drinking, I find now, in the last decade even, there's a lot more consciousness about health, and it's much more acceptable for people to be very moderate or even to abstain from alcohol consumption, which could benefit the church, yet there is that cultural basis that still needs to be addressed. I'd compare it to trying to be a vegetarian in Utah Mormon culture. It's actually fairly hard to do. If you go to any gathering of people, you sometimes have to search for strictly vegetarian eating. And my feeling, knowing people from France, having been on a mission there, is that they do find ways to adapt once they make the decision that they're going to follow the word of wisdom. As far as sexual behavior and attitudes, I have a lot less to say because I think it's true that French people are very private about that. And in all the discussions I've had with close friends from France, I've really never touched on the subject. But again, I think that once they go through the process of conversion, that's a private decision. And I don't know how much... Well, I guess what I would say is that if they do go through the process of conversion, that may not be as much of a problem as it seems. Although my recollection, too, as a missionary was that generally when members left the church, especially for young people, it was often because they just simply couldn't accept the sexual rules of the church, that it was too much part of their culture to be more open in their behavior. As far as the data and the discussion of that in John's paper, I think, again, there's a very slight influence of not considering the conference talks in the Etoile. I would think that if the editors were working towards that, you know, culture and looking at what was presented, if there were, say, two articles in the conference, in a conference issue about the word of wisdom, they may feel, well, we've addressed that topic. We don't necessarily need to expand on it elsewhere. That's a very minor point, though. I think what comes out of the data is kind of an affirmation that the church, in fact, doesn't consciously adapt to different cultures. And that there's essentially one message of conversion that centers around a personal spiritual experience for individuals. And I believe that if we looked at the message in other cultures, we'd probably find the same set of values promoted as was in the last table that he showed you, where the most important topic listed in the Etoile for 1988 was the Book of Mormon. I think you'd find the same emphasis on fundamentals, articles on conversion, on the Holy Ghost, on the family. And so in the conclusion, when he quotes Charles Didier, who says there's actually a gospel of Jesus Christ, I think the paper does support that fairly well. And there are a couple of other statements to that effect that I'm aware of. The first is an article is written by a professor at Weber State College from India, who's done a lot of studies in the Mormon areas. Everybody calls him Sesh. I won't even try and say his whole name. He wrote in 1980 in an article in Dialogue. He wrote an article. The title of the article was "Revelation: The Cohesive Element in International Mormonism." And his point, as kind of an outside observer of the church, was that the church avoids fragmentation in different cultures and avoids pluralism by stressing personal revelation and personal spiritual experience. And then, in fact, that's really the strong point of the church in terms of being able to keep a very unified worldwide church. The second item I'd refer to is a letter to the editor in this year's summer dialogue, written by a friend of mine, Christophe Dietsch, who's a French member who responded to that article of Brooklyn Durer, which is also fairly interesting on French culture. And in Christophe's letter, he said that it's not really fair to make a comparison between American and French Mormon cultures. One of his points was that, in fact, the most striking cultural difference is between converts and people who have grown up in the church. And he said that in studying the church, you might find more interesting things if you look at the different messages given to converts and how they react to it compared to lifetime members. So I think the gist of this paper is that, surprisingly enough, the church doesn't act as many social institutions. It doesn't localize with a conscious effort to reach the local culture on its own terms. In fact, it basically has a spiritual message, and that seems to transmit through cultures without a lot of localizing. So I think there are a few related topics that might be studied. This paper was a limited and fairly interesting paper, but there are other topics that I would suggest. First of all, studies of how well the church keeps its membership in other cultures. I know that in Europe in general, possibly with the exception of England, there are a fair number of conversions, but a fair number of people who lapse and leave the church. And I wonder if that has as much to do with not localizing as it does, you know, with just the general problem of converting people. My feeling is that French members, if they stay for more than a few years, they really do want to have a French Mormon culture. They want to reemphasize, you know, their needs as French people and as Mormons. And if the church doesn't address that, there is the possibility that, in fact, it loses people because of that. I think my feeling that is in Latin America, the church is stronger because it's managed to create a Latin American Mormon church, and there's a lot more voices coming from the members there than there are from Salt Lake City. This paper also deals with the frequency of messages given. Another study might well deal with the quality of the translation of material and whether, in fact, the church does try to, through its translation, reach people on their own language and in their own cultural ways. Finally, I think this paper does kind of reinforce that the church is still in a process of gathering people, and even though it goes into cultures and tells them to stay there and establish their own church, they are essentially asked to separate themselves from their culture. And that seems to be a requirement for keeping their church intact and strengthening it. Again, there are lots more issues that I think could be developed, but I did appreciate this paper for treating in a sociological, kind of empirical way that topic, and was interested that it did reinforce the church's own view that there is, in fact, a culture of Jesus Christ and that the message is the same wherever it goes.
It's actually time to go to the next session, but we could probably take a couple of questions if you have some. I don't believe there is another session in this room after this one is over, so if you're more than welcome to stay and talk with people, go right ahead and direct it to whomever you would like.
John, I was thinking that in light of the church's recent change in the policy for bishops and state presidents conducting courts, might have some kind of very immediate impact on the French cultural, that the shift is toward counseling rather than judging. And And I think that's a significant cultural exception that maybe Auntie mentioned at some point.
And we surely tie in with the retention of members.
Go ahead. I had a question concerning the separating the message of the gospel and the ritual of practicing the gospel and how that relates to the difference in culture. It's obviously the practice and the rituals that we go through in our meetings are Western and actually Yukon. And those, as far as I know, are identical in other cultures, the practice of them, but have very little to do with the message.
Yeah, I think
how does that affect the
I was somewhat, as Dan pointed out, I was really limiting my research